Manoucher Moutaki is here. He is the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran. His country is at the top of the international agenda today and plays an important role in its region. One issue between Iran and other nations is the question of its nuclear program. We'll talk about that with the foreign minister and also its relationship with the United States. I'm pleased to have him on this program for the first time. Mr. Minister, welcome. You have had a broad international experience. Look at your education in India. You have served in Turkey. You have been a member of the parliament. You've been involved in presidential campaigns. You know your country, and you also know the world. What is your agenda as foreign minister?
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, I am also pleased to be meeting you for the first time. And you and your shows are well known for people around the world, including my country. I refer to your recent interview with President Ahmadinejad. You are a well-known face. Now, my most important mission, or the diplomatic apparatus of any country for that matter, is to work for and contribute to peace and security, to change threats into opportunities, and also pave the way for the further promotion of our international relations, contributing later to the welfare and the interests of the country. So, the diplomatic core of any country will follow through a certain diplomacy. Around the world, we are looking for peace, stability, and justice. This will mean that, well, we have our critique of what exists right now. We believe that there should be a review of the current situation. There should be an effort as well to, as I said, to review and redress international relations.
What kind of criticism do you have of the United States? And then I shall suggest the kind of criticism the United States has of Iran, leading to the question of how do these two countries get beyond the conflict between them, and what might dialogue produce?
The people in my part of the world have no enmity or hatred towards the people of the U.S. What we are talking about has to do with the policies of U.S. officials. We think that today, more than any other time, pundits, scholars, thinkers, and wise men and women in the U.S. need to review, revise U.S.'s foreign relations. This need has everything to do with the serious events, developments that have happened in international relations. We think that with a serious revolution in meanings is before us, and simultaneous with new advances in hardware and technology, we see a soft power emerging. We think that the U.S. should review its policies, especially of the past 10 years around the world, and its 30 years of policies which are exclusive to Iran.
Right. The United States is reviewing its policies because it's electing a new president. I mean, what policies beyond the history would you like to see? What possibilities exist between a new president and Iran?
We think that the result of that review will produce good lessons for the U.S. Another point relates to unilateral policies, which basically say whatever I say is right and I will not tolerate anything else. They need to be reviewed, and also rhetoric and nothing else, and sermonizing others should be set aside. The U.S. needs to hear what others have to say.
I suggest to you that no American president has said anything harsher about Iran than your president, who I've interviewed twice, has said about the United States. And he's been scathing in his indictment of the United States.
I am sure you remember, Charlie, during the Iran-Iraq war, the U.S. Secretary of Defense on the deck of an American warship in the Persian Gulf said we should uproot the Iranian people. In the words used in the U.S., the words used by U.S. officials in the past 30 years are similar when it comes to Iran. American officials have roughly taken the same line when it comes to Iran and our peaceful activities and our efforts to defend the country.
Let's turn to nuclear and we'll come back to this. I have had this conversation with your predecessors. I've had this conversation with a previous president. I've had this conversation with your president in two separate occasions. Let's assume that you do, for a moment, have a nuclear program, both civilian with the possibility of being able to use it, if you desire, in a military way. Should the United States, should Israel, should the region fear Iran with nuclear weapons?
Thankfully, your shows are watched by many, many people. And I need to tell your good viewers that against my people, especially in the past 5 years, a great lie has been perpetuated. In other words, they're saying that Iran is trying to make a bomb. Iran, in the past years,
or the possibility of creating a bomb, not necessarily making a bomb.
True. I will get to that later. Some of these threats have materialized throughout 8 years of war. WMDs in those 8 years were used against Iran, but Iran never responded in kind. And so your hypothesis here doesn't have a sound basis, because this has no place in our philosophy. We don't believe in such weapons, and this has no place in our defensive doctrine. When it comes to an atomic weapon, we don't think that it is effective. We think that the time or the age of an atomic weapon has come to an end, and nuclear weapons are not there to preserve a party. It has one single purpose, and that is destruction. And they say that the U.S. can many times over destroy Russia with its atomic weapons, and Russia can destroy the U.S. many times minus one using atomic weapons. We do not believe its effectiveness. If nuclear weapons could resolve a crisis, they would have helped the Soviet Union to ward off destruction and would have helped Israel to prevail in the 33-day Lebanon war. With that in mind, we are not even thinking about moving or diverting towards a bomb. Iran's activities are very clear to the U.S. They are peaceful. What is being done right now is purely a political pressure. Iran has never posed a threat to the world. Iranian diplomacy is a part of an effort to resolve the issues as they exist in my part of the world.
Two things. As you know, Mr. El-Baradei has said that Iran could do more. It's in your interest, if you believe all that you just said, to prove it to the world. Let me give you an example of an interview I did recently with the Russian foreign minister, your counterpart, Mr. Lavrov. Here it is.
The sanctions in the Security Council have been used to stimulate Iranians to cooperate better with IAEA. They did work, they are working. The sanctions, which would be tantamount to punishing Iran, is not something we agreed. And we certainly would like to send a very strong signal to Iran that it should not consider this particular juncture in the world politics after the crisis in the Caucasus as an invitation to drag on in its cooperation with IAEA.
So there is a Russian foreign minister. You have a good relationship with Russia. It's helped you build your nuclear civilian potential. Asking for cooperation and help in proving that you don't have nuclear interest in a military way.
When it comes to the nuclear issue, one aspect has to do with our cooperation with the agency which you referred to earlier. For 38 years now, we have been a member of the agency and have signed up to the NPT. Throughout all of these years, especially in the recent years, we have shown outstanding cooperation to the agency. You will rarely come across a state which has been so cooperative with the agency around the world. 1.5 years ago, with the agency, based and because of the recommendations made by these countries, we hammered out a new modality for our new cooperation. Based on that modality, we announced to the agency, whatever questions, ambiguities you might have, you need to give them to us and we will respond. We will provide responses. All the questions that were largely given to the agency by the U.S. were given to us. In a one-year period, we responded to all of those questions one by one. And the agency, in a letter sent to us, announced that your answers are sufficient. In other words, they announced that our program is peaceful when it came to all the sets of questions. So once we received that letter, we were fully expecting that other states more specifically the 5+1, would welcome this constructive cooperation. And in last September's meeting, roughly 1 month ago, for Iran's dossier to be completely closed, set aside, done with. The agency's representative later came to Iran. He said, once we were through, the U.S. gave to us a new set of claims. And in accordance with the framework, we were not supposed to receive those because the time frame had been determined before. But those claims, let me tell you, are baseless, similar to previous claims. But the U.S. is interested, again, on an unending road to play, to continue this game they have started on our nuclear program. If a person is asleep, truly asleep, you knock on the door, he wakes up. But if a person is feigning sleep, how many times you knock on the door, he's not going to wake up. So the problem in the U.S. has to do with the fact that there is no necessary will to deal with Iran's nuclear issue.
David Kaye, the American, recently said, in the last week, that your country is within 2 to 3 years of having the potential to make nuclear weapons. 2 years. You don't get to 2 years without having done something with intent.
The people of the U.S. and people around the world remember the gentleman's comments about Iraq. His comments and certain belligerent comments and intentions in the U.S. led to an imposition of a U.S. war on Iraq. Iraq still is under Chapter 7, and one reason was WMDs, another was the occupation of Kuwait. The U.S. is still using Chapter 7 as a pretext to impose a security agreement on Iraq. The comments made by this man pushed the U.S. into a failed war. For 6 years now, thousands of young Americans have lost their lives in this war. Add to that hundreds of thousands of Iraqis. I ask you, sir, please be very careful when you quote such comments. Who is the person making these comments? Iran or our historical performance in the past, or comments by Iranian officials, for that matter? You need to produce facts that we have made comments or have had intentions to divert towards a bomb. Let me be very clear here. Iran is not a threat to anyone around the world.
Is Iran prepared to cease enrichment today?
Why do you think we should stop enriching?
Because you already have enough for the civilian purposes you intend.
Well, for one single power plant, We need to have many times more than what we have right now to enrich just for one single plant. Now, in Iran's plans, this is something that the Iranian parliament has approved and passed into law. Many thousands of megawatts of power need to be produced. These power plants, tens of billions of dollars of capital is spent on them. So they need fuel.
Let me make two points. One, Mohammed El Baradei has been on this program a number of times and will come back. Can you look into the camera and say to him, we have given you everything you need to assure the world that we have no interest in the capacity to produce a nuclear weapon? Say to Mr. El Baradei.
Well, I talked with Mr. El Baradei in Tehran. The officials of my country have talked with the gentleman, for that matter. Mr. El Baradei is completely familiar with our positions and points of view at the highest levels and offices of my country, whether they be religious leaders or political leaders, have commented on this matter, and the world knows well that we are opposed to nuclear weapons. And we are also calling for the destruction of all nuclear weapons around the world. Iran has no need for a bomb. A clear reason or witness to that claim has to do with our effort to stand up to various threats and those threats failing against my country. That is the best witness. And Mr. El Baradei is familiar with Iran, with our positions. And Mr. El Baradei is actually facing the same problem. The people, I earlier said, are feigning sleep, and however hard you knock on the door, they refuse to wake up.
Russia, a good ally of yours, and Georgia. What did you think of that conflict? And what are the consequences of that conflict?
The events in the Caucasus, what happened in Georgia, have caused concern in the region and outside the region. Iran, as a regional country, which has certain influence and good offices, utilized its efforts. We started talking with Baku, with Berlin, with the Russians. I myself, representing the Islamic Republic of Iran, started an initiative. Now, if you ask me why and how this incident happened, I have to respond by saying that it has everything to do with wrong information and miscalculations. Nobody would have thought that Russia would respond as they did, as it did rather. But Russia did just that. So the first point of problem, or the first problem, had to do with the use of force. Once a party uses force, the other one will respond in kind. They're going to use force as well. The second problem has to do with the territorial integrity of states. As I said earlier, this incident happened in Ossetia and Abkhazia, their independence. Some regional analysts are asking, is this not a response to the occupation later, an announcement of independence of a European country most recently last year. So you cannot, in one case, ignore the territorial integrity of one state, in another case, cry about or stress the need for the territorial integrity of another state. So regional analysts, some say that Ossetia is a response to Kosovo. If this is true, what happened over in Poland, more specifically signing an agreement for the missile shield in the first days of the crisis, will it receive its own particular response? These are worries and concerns that go beyond the issue of Georgia, Caucasus for that matter, and certain new competitions are emerging.
Are you hopeful that with new leadership that progress can be made, or will we always be having these difficult problems of past conflicts to overcome, whether it is the Shah and support of the Shah, the support of whatever support there was of Iraq in that terrible war with Iran and how so many of your countrymen suffered, or is there a possibility that you're simply, with new leadership, prepared to engage?
Mr. Gates, the U.S. Secretary for Defense, as you pointed out earlier, the previous secretaries of state have insisted and have talked about the need to negotiate, to talk with Iran. The Secretary of Defense has also said that we need to give concessions to Iran to start the talks. Now, compare this comment to the comments made by Mr. Weinberger back in the 80s as delivered on the deck of an American warship in the Persian Gulf. We think that this is progress. In the past 3 years, with the EU3 and the 5+1, we were talking, negotiating. The U.S. refused to participate. But most recently, Mr. William Burns, in the Geneva talks, the gentleman participated in those talks, and we welcomed his participation. Therefore, in Iran, any event in the U.S. or in His Excellency's words, moves in the U.S. are monitored and we respond in kind.
I have been advised by your colleagues that you have other appointments, and I respect that. There is an American expression which you well know because you speak very fluent English, I say, and I hope the next conversation will be in English, and I'm sorry it can't be in Farsi, because I don't have that much time to learn Farsi, even if I was capable of doing it. I know you understand English, but the expression is to be continued.
If you are enough patient to hear my weak English, then you definitely will have my cooperation in the next conversation.
Thank you, sir. Back in a moment. Stay with us.